Welcome to Running on Indy, episode 2. I'm Jesse Davis.
And I'm Blake Robertson.
On today's episode, we're going to be talking with our coach, Matt Ebersole of Personal Best Training, about a variety of running topics and share some personal stories the three of us have had over the years.
Before we get started, I would like to thank our sponsor, 361. Keep listening for details because I'm going to tell our viewers here how you can win a free pair of 361 shoes.
Yeah, we'll be talking about that at the end of the show. Right now, let's just get right into our interview with our excellent coach, Matt Ebersole, who's helped us over the years achieve some amazing things, and he's helped athletes all over Indy reach their goals. And so, Matt, welcome again. You want to tell us a little bit about yourself and your coaching business?
Yeah, well, let's talk about how I got into coaching to begin with. I started running in 1980 as a seventh grader. Right before the cross-country season started, I ran a 15K. That was my first road race. So it's been a few years, and the next year I started in high school and I was on a pretty good team, but I wasn't part of the pretty good part. I was 23rd man on a team of 23. So I took an interest pretty early on in training and how to do it better and how to train smarter and harder. And so just through a lot of reading, took quite an interest in it. And as things went on, I had teammates start asking me about training. And then when I got to college, I had a couple of different coaches and things weren't going real well. When I left college, I wanted to continue to run hard and met a guy in Atlanta, Roy Benson, and he started coaching me. And the really cool thing about that, there were a few. One was I wasn't training as hard as I did in college, but I ran faster. I thought that was a pretty good trade-off because I was training smarter and more systematically. And then the second thing was he wasn't a teacher because I thought you had to be a teacher to be a coach. So I had 3 years in towards history education and political science and found a guy that was doing it without teaching, because then I could find a teacher who enjoyed their job. So then I went back to school, came back to Indiana, went to Ball State for exercise phys, and the coaching career started shortly after that.
Awesome. Who were some of your early coaching influences?
Of course, Roy Benson, because, again, training not quite as hard as I did in college, but running faster was great. Everybody has been influenced by Lydiard, who years later I brought to Indy on his last world tour.
Yeah, legend.
Yeah, so a lot there. At the time, as they are now, Oregon was a major influence in college running, but the Bowerman and Dillinger eras and their five principles of training were kind of a big deal as well.
Interesting stuff. Known you for 8 years, Matt, and I didn't even know, never knew how you got into it, so interesting. So, Matt, for athletes that would love to hook up with you, can you kind of tell us how many athletes you're currently coaching now and the range of abilities you work with?
I have several different programs. So under the whole umbrella, there's about 200, 250 runners that I work with in a year, and that includes some triathletes as well. I have private coaching, which encompasses what I do for you two guys, where everything's very individualized and it's what are your goals, what races do you want to run, and we build that around what time and energy you have to put into it and what your goals are. Then I have a running club, which is typically a little more casual, a little bit more group oriented. And then I have some special programs like the Indy Runners Speed Sessions. Jesse, being president of that group, is familiar with that one.
Oh yeah.
So we have a group that joins us every July through November, and they come out to the Tuesday workouts. So it's a nice group and it's a nice mix. As far as who do I coach, I have some people that have been jogging around the block a few times and decide I want to run the mini, I want to run a marathon, whatever, but I'm not quite sure what I'm doing. I'm too busy to figure this out on my own. I don't want to work real hard and not get where I want to go. So I have some pretty novice runners, but then also guys like you that have been doing this for as long as you can remember, really.
Yeah.
And have accomplished quite a bit. So, and that's what keeps my business fresh for me, because I see the success from people that have just started, but also success from people that have been working hard for a long time And that energy kind of feeds off of each other for the runners as well.
Yeah. I know I have a follow-up on that. I know when I talk to a new runner, there's a little bit of an intimidation factor. They're not used to being around other runners. And how do you deal with making them feel welcome when they're just getting into running and they don't really know much about it? Yeah.
There's a couple of things I like to tell somebody when they come out, and I know they're intimidated, especially about getting on the track with people that are just literally flying by, is one, if you come out, no matter how slow you are, you won't stay that way. That's my job.
Oh, yeah.
I will get you faster. So, and then usually if somebody comes out, they're pleasantly surprised that they're not the slowest in the group. And if they are the slowest in the group, I tell them, you serve a very important role. You make the second slowest person feel really good about themselves. Everybody on this team has a role.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. What is the biggest mistake that you see that your runners make when they're getting into running for the first time?
I would say that there's two mistakes. They're very similar, but at different ends of the spectrum. One is somebody that won't rest, they won't recover, they want to train hard every day. And it may work for a little while, but eventually there's a breakdown at the end of that path.
Yeah, I've seen that a lot with different athletes.
And it's just, and Jesse, you're a great example. I tell him, you should see Jesse on an easy day. There's some easy days I can run with Jesse. So you know Jesse's running really slow if I can keep up with him on one of his recovery days. That has to happen, and the harder your hard days, the easier your easy days. So getting them to take the recovery to heart and realize that's an important part of the training. The other side, some people like to talk about it more than they like to do it, and they kind of kid themselves about what they're willing to put into it. And once they realize, okay, are my goals and what I'm willing to put into this in line, they're usually a lot happier.
Yeah, definitely. Obviously, we've been a part of your program for a while, and you do, I think, an excellent job of making everybody feel welcome and not intimidated. What are some of your most memorable coaching success stories off the top of your head?
And you can't say Jesse.
Not involving Blake or Jesse.
Yeah, you can't involve Blake or Jesse.
We'll hit on a little bit of some of that later.
We're dealing with 26 years of personal best training. So,
oh, yeah.
So there's a lot of them, and some will come to mind for random reasons from time to time, and I really appreciate those. One of my best coaching jobs, I think, and any good coaching job is obviously the tip of the iceberg. The rest of it is the person that's working too hard. But Dick Levins is a guy who has been in the program at various stages for a long time. And when his Boston qualifying time was 3:35, he was a solid four-hour marathoner on his best day. But somehow, he really wanted it, and we happened to do the right things. He ran 3:35 at Chicago 1 year, and that was just amazing.
Man, I wish I could PR by 25 minutes.
To see somebody who worked hard at it, maybe didn't have a whole lot of natural running talent, but loved what he was doing, to do that was incredible. The other one that I always have to, I'd be remiss if I didn't point out, was I had a young lady who told the coach of a running club that she was in at the time that she wanted to qualify for Boston, and he literally laughed at her. And I was like, well, that's never going to happen for you. Well, that kind of made her angry. Somebody sent her my way, and I took her seriously enough that she had a little bit of success, kind of took up triathlon, and that was her focus for a while, and then came back to me about 10 years later. And at that time, she'd gotten down to 3:30. She had run Boston before. But over the next couple of years, at age 48, she ran a 3:13 marathon. So she qualified by about 2 minutes a mile for Boston. And wow. I always wanted her to go back to that guy and say, hey, look. Because I'm not sure he ever qualified for Boston.
That's awesome.
And by the way, I married the girl.
Oh, yeah, Rebecca.
Well, one thing, Matt, that I find amazing about you is, if anybody knows runners, we're all head cases in our old way. So you coach all these athletes from elite all the way down to just, you know, your casual joggers. And every one of them is probably a head case. So my question for you, and I'm throwing myself in there because you probably get 50 texts and emails from me. so how do you mentally handle that and physically handle that? Because there's probably tons of Blakes out there and tons of Jessies out there. If something goes wrong, boom, they're going to you. So just kind of touch on that and how you kind of
yeah. I'd imagine you have to have really good time management.
Yes, there's a. I heard a couple of questions in there,
and I really think you handle it really well. You really, really well, because sometimes you. I feel guilty.
You said 250 athletes. That's yeah. got to be tough.
Mm-hmm. Part of the answer to that question, I guess I should say that I haven't trained hard, what I would consider hard, for about 10 years now, but I still race, and the last year or so I've started to race a little bit more and plan to do more of that again. And it's good for me to do that, because when I see somebody that's a little panicky, they're going to do something stupid because of the nerves, it's easy for me to sit there and say, come on, man, what's the problem? But then when I put myself on the line and I go race and there's something important and I feel the same nerves, it's like, ah.
Yep.
Yeah, I remember this now. So that helps me deal with that. That helps me be a little more empathetic to, I understand, you've put a lot of your heart and soul into this race. If there wasn't a big case of nerves, something's wrong. So that certainly helps. There are points in the year, I have 2 points in the year that are critical mass. Usually when we get to Carmel, Boston, Mini, that's a big couple of weeks there. And then obviously in the fall, we've just started hitting it leading up to Monumental. We have a lot of people entering into their goal races, and this is what they've been training for with some specificity now for a couple of months, and it's real important. So when I leave the Monumental Marathon on that Saturday, I'm ready for vacation.
Oh,
for
I
sure.
Bet, yeah.
But I know how important it is to people, and I know how I feel going into that kind of race. So I got to make sure that I'm spreading myself as far as I need to.
Yeah, and just to follow up on that, I'm sure you're like living these races through your athletes, and what is it like personally when a race at the highest of highs goes perfect and everything runs well versus the lowest of lows when it didn't work out, which everybody that runs long enough is going to have both those days.
Yeah, you don't race often enough if you never have a bad day, or your goals aren't high enough if you never have a bad day.
That's true.
I first race I think of is Monumental last year. I had 128 runners at the Monumental Marathon. I had some outstanding races. Kelby, Tracy, so many people just ran out of their minds and just ran beautiful races. And I got to be at the finish line to see those, and it's so exciting. But I had just a couple bad ones. And one that I can think of, it was rough to take. Mm-hmm. And as I'm enjoying the others, that's still on my mind. And fortunately, anybody that has a bad day, typically I've seen a good day or two or more for them as well. And I know that they're going to come back and rectify that, and hopefully sooner rather than later.
Yeah. And sometimes people end up having great days they're just not satisfied with for whatever reason. You got to probably put that in perspective for them.
Yes.
I was one of those bad days.
Yeah. This year at Boston, Adam Schmela, I'll throw his name out. I was watching online and seeing the splits, and I had an idea what the weather was doing to people. And he was about 10 minutes slower than he wanted to be. And I thought he ran a great race. And I texted him afterwards and said, hey, great job. Way to hang in there on a really rough weather day. And he was so upset. And I said, give this a little time. Wait till you figure out what kind of day this was. See what other people ran. And eventually, I think he's come around to appreciate it a whole lot more. We still have some unfinished business with a PR. But sometimes during the race, you're beating yourself up. I'm running horribly. And then at the finish, it's like, you know what? That wasn't that bad.
Yeah, definitely. I'm sure that happens a lot.
Well, I know you've mentioned Monumental as one of the goal races that you coach, as well as Boston and so on and so forth. And if nobody knows, you're the elite coordinator of the Monumental Marathon, so you handle all the head cases of the head cases. So I guess for somebody who's an elite out there or looking for possible to get in as an elite, could you kind of touch on qualifications, what they need to do, and all that jazz?
Yeah, with the Monumental Marathon, what we've tried to do, and I've been in that role since 2013, and I came into that at a great time because the president of the board, John Little, had been in the Olympic trials for the marathon. The executive director was a sub-4-minute miler. So they saw the value of it as an event, as a community event, as something that's going to benefit the community as well as the community of runners, but also a race and a sport. And we've continued that with Jed now as the new executive director. We've tried to put a race together to where it is an actual race rather than having one or two fast people come in and blow the field away. We want it to be as competitive as possible. We've tried to hit that level around the Olympic trials, qualifiers in the marathon and the half marathon. And so far it's worked out pretty well. So if somebody wants to be an elite athlete, certainly if any level is welcome, but if somebody for men is, if they've run under 110, for the half marathon, women under 122, they should contact me by October 1st. And in the marathon, for women under 255 and men under 238, they should contact me.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but aren't you stacking the 5K this year too? Isn't that the plan?
Well, we do have one in the 5K. We had somebody, we don't really set up an elite field for the 5K, but occasionally we have somebody that has a local tie that we want to to kind of showcase. We did that a couple of years ago, and we were kind of surprised how fast he ran because we thought he'd want to run a little slower, come back the next year, break his record again, and do it a few times. But he ran 14:08 and kind of put it out of reach.
That would really be Rob Mullet, yeah. And he's an Olympian.
Yeah, people asked if it was a typo, so you ran pretty well.
Well, your part of your job as well is putting together a pace team. So, do you want to put a plug in for that right now? Because I'm sure you're looking for people.
Yes, I do. That is the more nerve wracking of the two things.
Yeah, the elites seek you out. The pacers, you got to seek them out, I'm sure.
Yeah, and pacing is a lot of responsibility, but it's a really fun, rewarding thing. We have people that have been doing it for as long as I've been in this role and before. We're trying to get as many local pacers as possible. We do have some that come from surrounding states, and that's great, and they've done a wonderful job for us. But I like to think of our apprenticeship program to where if you're interested in pacing, let me know. Because even if you're not quite ready to handle a group on your own, we might throw you in there and let you double up on a pace group and just see what it's like and see if you enjoy doing it, and maybe next year you'll get your own group.
Jesse, you want to put a plug in for our sponsor?
Yeah, we could take a moment to talk about 361. They are paying the bills here. Mm-hmm. And 361 is a new company out on the running shoe scene. And we both, Blake and I, are sponsored by them. And it's just an excellent running shoe. I just ran a race, a 50K recently, in one of their shoes, the Ortega 2. And it actually performed really well as a trail 50K. And but we'll come back to them in a little bit. Like I said, we're going to be running a competition to win a free pair of 361 shoes. So please stay tuned for that. Back to Matt. Had to get that in there real quick. So Matt, we were talking about running stories a second ago, and last week, Blake and I were mainly focusing on some stories that we had about each other, and one of them was when Blake moved to Indy, he got lost in the Monon, which I just wanted to repeat that because anyone that's ran the Monon, it's straight north and straight south, so it's very impressive that he actually got lost on the Monon. So do you have any personal stories about Blake or me running, and possibly Blake and me running, or anything that you think the audience might find entertaining?
Or me getting lost at Eagle Creek where I run every day.
Oh, and that too?
That too.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks for reminding me of that. I'm not sure I would have gotten there, but that's an excellent one. I've said this more than once about Blake, and I still think this is true, and Blake and I have come to a better understanding of each other, I think, over the years we've worked together, and I think maybe he trusts me a little more than in the early years. But I've said that the scariest words in the English language are when Blake says, "I was thinking." That makes me very nervous. But as we've worked together, when he says that, every once in a while there's, "Hey, that's a good idea. Let's figure out a way to make that work." So
Blake has some gems sometimes.
Yeah, the give and take has gone really well. And I was honored to attend Blake's wedding in North Carolina, and because I was from out of town, I got invited to the rehearsal dinner, and hearing Blake interact with his family and his close, longtime friends was priceless. I'll leave it at that for now, but it was priceless.
It was too long.
It was too long, but it was quality entertainment. I guess the two stories about Blake would be, one, the personal best five, which is a race that I put on that's basically an inter-squad game with the personal best training runners. Last year was the first year we had it at Eagle Creek, where Blake runs five times a week, seven times a week now?
Because he lives there.
Pretty much almost every day.
So we're running the 8K course, and I extended it to 5 miles to get our distance. And Blake won the 10K. We didn't really have a 10K, but he won it.
To be fair, I run the 10K course like multiple times a day, like laps and laps, to equal get my mileage. So the 8K threw me for a loop.
Mm-hmm. Maybe you should have been thinking there.
I should have been thinking.
On the other side, monumental, the years start to get a little fuzzy. I think it's 2014.
Yes.
Oh, that's a good race.
After a couple of marathons where you ran okay, but it wasn't quite what we knew you could do, you cashed in some training. 232?
Mm-hmm.
And First Indiana.
That was a shocker.
Ran out. It was a beautiful race. Outstanding job. So all those stories balance out.
I remember that one right before I had to give you a pep talk. Blake was doubting himself. And he didn't know if he could beat all the people that we've been training with. And I'm like, "Blake, you've been hammering all these guys in practice. What would be any different from the race?" And he's like, "Oh, yeah, that makes sense." And then he just like got this confidence about him, and it ran awesome.
Yeah, it went well that day. The one thing I do remember about that, though, which is kind of a good thing and also a disappointment, but I remember coming up on the bridge. I think it's about 3 or 4 miles to go, right on Meridian. And I remember you standing right there, and you looked at me like, "All right, stay like this, and you're going to go 229. And not long after you said that, I completely ate shit. But I ended up PRing, and I ended up running really, really well. So it ended up turning out really good. And I found out later that I was the top Indiana. I was like, "What the hell?"
Yeah, some of my best races, I was definitely dying at the end as well. So, I mean, that's to be expected.
And Jesse, who I don't even know where to start with Jesse, so I'll start at the beginning. The first workout that he ever did, he remembers this one. He was living in Bloomington at the time, so drove up. Depending on the time of day, it's either 45 minutes or an hour and a half. This was an hour and a half, probably.
With no air conditioning.
With no air conditioning.
And a very hot day.
So, if you've ever met Jesse, you know he's not weighing in at a whole lot. He was weighing in even less that day, very dehydrated from the drive up. And we have this hill circuit that everybody knows and loves. It's in personal best training. So, his first workout is on the hill circuit. And after a couple of them, with still a few to go, he was done. We were worried about his health. We stopped the workout. But what I could see in there, and I saw a number of times since then, is Jesse can and is willing to go as deep or deeper than anybody I know. And so it's like, okay, if we just get you a little water, you're gonna do something. And of course he has. That leads directly into seeing him run his first ultra, where, okay, he's a marathoner, he's a road guy, what does he know about trail running? And he came out and won his first ultra and put himself pretty deep.
Yeah.
I got there late. It was a 12-hour day. How far can you run in 12 hours? I came out with probably 4 hours to go or something, or maybe even less than that. I guess a fair weather coach spectator here. But I jog out on the course expecting to see Jesse kind of having a good time, kind of cruising along. And he was on the verge of death.
Yeah.
And kind of mumbling to himself, and this is bad. Clearly, the guy needs some calories. He needs some fluids. So we got some calories in him. And he went from barely moving to, I swear, it was 6:30 pace in the matter of about 10 minutes.
Well, that guy was coming up on me for first place. I had to get going.
And then this particular Hawthorne half day, it ends with a half-mile loop. So you're not out there doing a partial loop of the three-mile loop. And these guys are trading off, and Jesse's got a lap lead on him. And they're running six-minute pace at the end of 12 hours. And it was just incredible to watch. And then Jesse sat down afterwards. We weren't sure he was ever going to get up again. But it's that ability to go deep that's been amazing.
Oh, yeah. I really enjoy the pain aspect, I guess, of running.
You like it deep, Jesse.
My 1 degree beyond, if mm-hmm. you want to, like, make another sponsor plug. But, I just kind of, when I envision myself after a race, and I think the perfect race, I often imagine myself in that lawn chair, dead, and just loving every minute of it because I knew I pushed myself the hardest. So I always think about that. It's a good image. I wish somebody would paint a portrait of me in that lawn chair just half dead.
Well, we don't have that, but we do have the picture of you crossing the finish line at Monumental in 2015.
Oh, yeah.
As we're looking for that 2 seconds that ended up being you made it by 58.
Yeah.
So
that was a good
reversal,
race.
Yeah. So, go ahead.
Well, Matt, well, moving forward, where would you like to see the future of PBT go? What do you see in your mind?
Excellent question. I think what I'm doing right now, I'm happy with it, but I also know that no business stays the same. So that's something that I spend some time thinking about. I'm not quite sure where that's going yet. We have some guys in the group that have taken some training trips. I've taken groups to marathons in the past. That might be something that we would do. Colorado Springs, perhaps, or somewhere for a training weekend, a training week, something along those lines. So I don't know. That's something that I need to figure out and spend some time thinking about.
Yeah, I got one more question, more technical, on the technical side. So if you had only one workout to give someone, what would it be that you would get the most bang for your buck if you did that workout?
I have about five of those, but you asked for one, so I'll give you one. Because when I'm not quite sure what to do with somebody, or we're trying to figure out where they are fitness-wise, my favorite is progression run. Because a progression run, I think, is pretty easy mentally. Because the only objective is start slow and get faster. Okay? So there's no pressure. I have to hit these times. It's just whatever I ran, the next mile should be faster. And what happens with most runners who are typically type A, if they've found me at some point along the line, is they have no problem cranking it up once they get going. So it ends up being a great workout. It's mentally easy to get into. You can make it as hard or as easy as you want. Last night, most of the group did a Predator run, which is kind of a higher octane version of that. And it's, you start a little faster and end even faster. So I really like that one. And when people travel, you know, I'm dealing primarily with people that have day jobs and families and all kinds of things going on. When they travel and they're not sure they can get something in, do a progression run. You leave the hotel, you don't know what kind of shape you're in from all this business travel. Just try to get faster. And no matter what amount of time you have, leave a little time for a cool down and get a good workout.
Yeah, we've definitely done a few of those, Blake, over the years.
Definitely,
yeah,
definitely.
It's a great workout.
Sometimes they end up going the other way.
Yeah, I find if you start a little, if you start a little quick on that one, it can definitely, you can do a degression run.
Yeah, degression run.
When I started those, I know this isn't an original workout with me, but when I really started embracing them and using them a lot, I was in Wisconsin in the middle of nowhere, no tracks, nothing marked, and this was, you know, I'm old, pre-GPS. So I went out and I thought, okay, every 7.5 minutes, I'm going to go faster. And I was just looking at heart rate, and my heart rate kept going up. So I don't know whether the splits were fast or not. I just knew I was working harder. So even sometimes when the splits go the wrong way, or you run an Eagle Creek and you hit the bottom of the big hill and you're supposed to increase speed and it doesn't happen, as long as you're working harder, you're getting the benefit of the workout.
Well, I know you're big on heart rate. That's one thing you're big on. You heart rate over GPS. I know that just from training with
effort,
you.
Effort and not really the time you put in that. So.
Well, Matt, we'd like to thank you for coming out tonight. So quick question to follow up on that. If people want, if somebody wants to join you and they want to start up with PBT, what is the best way they can find you and contact you?
They can go to personalbesttraining.com. They can email me from there. And typically what I'll do is I'll send them a runner profile, which is just a little questionnaire. It gives me a lot of good information that I can take a look at a glance. And then I see what's the best fit based on what they've done, what their goals are. Is private coaching their best bet? Is the running club the best bet? Is just a consultation a better fit for them at that time? And then we kind of go from there.
Awesome. Well, thanks, Matt. It was great talking to you today. Mm-hmm. Next week, or next episode, I mean, we'll be talking with some representatives from Back on My Feet. It's a great organization that helps homeless people reconnect and get, like they say, back on their feet with job opportunities, and they do it through running, and it's a really great organization that I'm actually a member of their young professional board and do some fundraising for them. So we'll be talking about that next week. And in the meantime, please make sure to follow us on Twitter, Instagram. We have a Facebook page. It's all under Running on Indy. We're going to be, we'll have a blog as well, Running on Indy. So all that will be available. We want your support. We want you to share the show if you like it, so we can get as many listeners as possible. And we're going to actually have an Instagram competition. And Blake, you want to tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, and before I talk about that, we also want your input on the show. Anything you want to hear that are topics you want us to discuss,
reach out
and let us know. We'll try to bring in guests, if there's a particular guest you want, if we can do that. So definitely reach out and let us know,
and tweet us,
anything.
Yeah, and we'll be doing like I said, a competition on Instagram. So all you have to do to get involved on this is go to a runner's forum and get a picture trying on a pair of 361 shoes. You can go to any runner's forum. We may give preference, though, to winners if they come see Blake or I. But you can go to any runner's forum. It doesn't matter. There's 7 locations in town. And make sure that you use @runningonindy, @361USA, and #361Indy. And the best picture chosen by Blake and I will win the competition, and you'll get a free pair of 361 shoes. And it's pretty cool that they're hooking us up like that. And, well, and you. So.
And for those of you who don't know, I'm the manager at the downtown location. Jesse's the manager
at the Broad Ripple location, which so. Broad Ripple is more hip and cool. Mm-hmm. Downtown's getting there, but, you know, what can you do? It's tough to compete with Broad Ripple. I mean,
downtown is where all the cool people are.
All right. Once again, I'm Jesse Davis.
And I'm Blake Robertson.
Make sure to keep running on Indy.